Good morning, everyone, and welcome to a special edition of A Vision for You. Today is Sunday, October 27, 2024. My name is Melanie C., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Canby, Oregon. The share ID numbers for Friday, October 25, 2024, are the following. The 7 a.m. Eastern Time Big Book Study share ID number is 21862. 21862. Let me restate that. That's not correct. It's 21861, 21,861. And then the 10 a.m. Eastern Time Big Book Study share ID number, as you might be able to guess, is 21862, 21,862. This morning, A Vision for You presents The Fellowship of the Spirit. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past, give freely of what you find, and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. To hear that all-familiar paragraph being read to you, does it bring peace and assurance to you like it does to me? It just melts my heart, lowers my shoulders, and gives me such promise. I hope it does the same for you. Today, as we gather, I want to highlight the profound significance of the Fellowship of the Spirit. Notice that both Fellowship and Spirit are capitalized, signifying that we are speaking of the power greater than ourselves. This concept is not just a lofty idea. It is a fundamental truth that unites us as a problem, as problem and ex-problem eaters. It serves as a reminder that we are not alone in our struggles. We stand together, each bringing our own understanding of God and our experiences to this collective pilgrimage. We all recognize the need for a power greater than ourselves, especially when faced with the overwhelming challenges of compulsive overeating. This need drives us to come together to support one another and to cultivate an environment of compassion and understanding. Bill Wilson's teachings in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous emphasize living and serving together in harmony, highlighting the critical role that fellowship plays in our recovery. It's vital that we understand the potential for division if we overlook our interdependence on each other and on God. When we isolate ourselves, we risk losing the very support that can help heal us. By standing strong in the spirit of unity and maintaining a singleness of purpose, we can create a powerful community that fosters recovery and growth. Today, our speaker will delve deeper into this essential concept of recovery, the idea that we need each other and need a power greater than ourselves. Our speaker will bring to life quotes and passages from our text that illuminate the importance of and necessity of fellowship in our spiritual progress. Through this exploration, we will gain a clearer understanding of how this connection enhances our recovery process and strengthens our resolve. So let us open our hearts and our minds to the wisdom that we will share this morning, and may we be inspired to embrace the fellowship of the Spirit as we continue our individual and collective recovery spiritual quest forward, healing with fulfillment. In the fellowship of the Spirit, let us welcome our guest speaker this morning, Abby D. from Michigan, with a very warm visionary welcome. Welcome today, Abby D. We're glad that you're here helping us.
Hi, good morning, everyone. My name is Abby D. I'm a recovered compulsive eater and bulimic in Michigan. This morning, grateful to be here with you to talk about the Fellowship of the Spirit. Thank you for that beautiful introduction. And I feel like I'm surrounded by my friends, my family here in Overeaters Anonymous. Thank you to those who are in my life today and continue to be walking this path with me. I just want to start off by giving gratitude and appreciation to my friends in this program, my sponsors that have helped me along the way, people that I have sponsored, people that I've come in contact over the last 8 years. I would not be here without the Fellowship of the Spirit, and I would not be able to have the relationship with God that I do today if it weren't for all the amazing people that I've met and continue to walk with in this program. So I'll start off by saying what it was like. So I came into Overeaters Anonymous about 8 years ago. I had a couple years of recovery, and then after 2 years, I got sloppy and started slipping with my resentment, and I ended up relapsing. I had a horrendous relapse from bulimia. I've been bulimic basically my whole life. This disease, for me, killed me from the inside out. Some methods that I've tried to control my weight, my food, my body, was trying to diet, trying to eat less, and that wasn't working. So I discovered purging, and in this way, I thought I had arrived, that I had found the solution. I could eat what I want and wouldn't have to gain weight, although I did end up gaining weight even with purging. And, you know, that did not last, because it just took me to a place of loneliness and despair that was completely unmanageable. Some other methods I've tried are exercising, going to certain spiritual groups that were not Overeaters Anonymous. I got some professional help that was great, but couldn't help me with this. I tried certain appetite suppressants, including certain like unhealthy drugs that were not prescribed to me. I tried to use those to not eat as much. I tried moving across the country. I moved from Michigan to California, swearing it off that I'll be different. I'm going to start over. I'm going to get a new life. I tried tracking all of my food and my micros and calories and macros into an app. I tried going on these health kicks, posting things on social media, trying to, on the outside, get this lifestyle. On the inside, I just knew that I was absolutely powerless. Like, I had hit a point in that relapse where the loneliness and despair is unmatched. So I want to start by getting into the big book, too. On page 3 in Bill's story, it says, and I'm just going to replace the word drinking for binging. My binging assumed more serious proportions, continuing all day and almost every night. The remnants of my friends terminated in a row, and I became a lone wolf. There were many unhappy scenes in our sumptuous apartment. So in my apartment, there was very unhappy scenes of me binging with the shades drawn, just completely withdrawing from life, not answering my phone calls, you know, the lights dimmed, just complete despair. And that the loneliness and despair I felt was really, it was greater than anything I had experienced before. And, you know, excess food ceased to be a luxury. It became a necessity. It says in Bill's story, like, I didn't want to be eating excess food. I didn't want to be binging, but it seemed like it reached a point where I couldn't live with it and I couldn't live without it. Like, I was stuck in this place of wanting that, but not being able to. And on page 7 in Bill's story, it says, it relieved me somewhat to learn that in compulsive eaters, the will is amazingly weakened when it comes to combating excess food, though it often remains strong in other respects. My incredible behavior in the face of a desperate desire to stop was explained. I had a desperate desire to stop. I couldn't. And I was very strong in other areas. I consider myself to be personable and educated, and you know, I have a passion for other, you know, other in other areas, but for this I couldn't. My willpower was just not enough. I couldn't. I had this desperate desire to stop, but I couldn't. And it took me to a place of complete loneliness and despair. On page 8 in Bill's story, it says, "No words can tell of the loneliness and despair I found in that bitter morass of self-pity. Quicksand stretched around me in all directions. I had met my match. I had been overwhelmed. Food was my master." And that's exactly what it was. As I was face down, binging and purging in a public bathroom, wondering, how did I get here again? How could I possibly, like, let myself? I thought it was, you know, me that was doing it. How could I let myself get here again? To really, really, really want something and not be able to control it and be out of control and physically, mentally, bodily, like that insanity, there's no words that can describe that feeling. And so anyone who's here today who might be feeling that, just know this book offers a solution. And I have been able to be relieved from this dark, dark place. And that was 6 years ago. And since then, the miraculous has happened. And I have in the past 6 years, I have not found the desire to overeat. I have maintained abstinence for 6 years consecutively, day after day, by the power of God that I found through this program. So what was the turning point? Again, just kind of staying in Bill's story, page 14, while I lay in the hospital, the thought came that there were thousands of hopeless compulsive eaters who might be glad to have what had been so freely given to me. Perhaps I could work with some of them. They, in turn, might work with others. And again, I'm just changing the word because for the sake of this talk. So, you know, they, in turn, might work with others. People helped me. Like, I had a sponsor who gave me the direction in this big book and helped me, like, climb out of that horrendous place. I worked the steps completely abstinent. I put the food down with the help of a professional and my sponsor, found out what I was supposed to be eating, put my food on a scale, abstained from certain foods and food ingredients, and I was absolutely willing to go to any length for what my sponsor had. I saw what she had, and I was absolutely willing to go to any length. She took me through this book. She took me through the steps as laid out in this book, and I had a spiritual experience. I found a higher power that worked to relieve the obsession. So not only did I feel better in my life, well, actually I felt all my feelings better, but not only did I have a spiritual experience, like a connection with God, but this connection with God was enough to bring about recovery from compulsive eating. It says in the spiritual experience on page 5-67 that spiritual experience is a personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from compulsive eating and has manifested itself among us in many different forms. So this, I found God when, like, the obsession was removed. When I no longer had the desire to eat certain foods and food ingredients or excess food off my plan, like, that's that's when I started really knowing that there was a God, like absolutely knowing for a fact that there was a God, when that obsession was removed. The obsession in the mind has got to be like the worst thing, like to be ruled, just complete insanity. That was the worst. That was the absolute worst. And that was lifted. And getting more into like the talk of the day, that's kind of like the depressing part of my life, but it got way better, I'm here to say. I have found so much joy and purpose in this fellowship. And so I'm just going to go through the book in certain places that I found that I just really love how the big book focuses on the fellowship. And, you know, fellowship even being capitalized, like that there is something so special in the connections that we make with other people, and the identification of me too, that happened to me too, and finding hope in other people's stories, and, you know, laughter and love and fun, like that's what really, really establishes this feeling of love and connection and spirituality. And, you know, that the fellowship of the spirit is how I continue to seek and be in my relationship with others and God. So on page 15, it says, "We commenced to make many fast friends, and the fellowship has grown up among us, which it is a wonderful thing to feel a part. The joy of living we really have, even under pressure and difficulty. There is scarcely any form of trouble and misery which has not been overcome among us. We meet frequently so that newcomers may find the fellowship they seek." And, you know, okay, a couple things here. So first, the joy of living, even under pressure and difficulty. There can be all sorts of things going on in my life, but like people in this program have helped me walk things. It says that there's scarcely any form of trouble and misery which has not been overcome among us. We can find pretty much any experience in life that someone in this program has walked through, navigated without compulsive eating. And that to me is like such a great thing. Like I can get support. I can get fellowship. I can get hope from people who have walked through certain things. And then we meet frequently so that newcomers may find the fellowship they seek. Like if we aren't, we need to be here to be there for the newcomer who comes in. And, you know, if people weren't there when I walked in, I wouldn't have found this. I didn't find it by being in my room alone, you know, just reading this book. I needed other people to share their experiences, for me to identify and say, you know, that happened to me too. And on page 89, just flipping to page 89, says, you know, this is our 12th suggestion. Carry this message to other compulsive eaters. You can help when no one else can. Life will take on new meaning, to watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. And this has absolutely been the bright spot of my life. I have a lot of experiences that I want to share. So just a few experiences in my personal stories of, you know, fellowship and connection. I have fellowship in my everyday life. I also have involvement in retreats and different group gatherings in OA. I have things and groups that I go to. There's certain, you know, tokens and treasures that I carry with me that remind me of the people who I love in this program, special times, and there's just some special moments of fellowship that I want to go over. So some of my fellowship in my everyday life, examples of that. So I was encouraged to get to know people in my local area. My sponsor probably, I don't know, I'd say maybe a little over a year ago, like really encouraged me to get involved in local fellowship. I was doing a lot of phone meetings, a lot of Zoom meetings where my friends were, you know, just virtual, which is great. I love my virtual community. But my recovery changed when I started to have like actual local friendships. And I mean, I had local friendships, but I'd say really in the last like year or two, really, really made me feel more a part of society, of community, that I had friends. And so there's a couple people that I started to connect with that live near me. It's about 30 to 40 minute drive, but I knew these people from the phone meetings. We had talked, you know, briefly here and there, but I started making a real effort to get together with them. And we would start out by having lunch or, you know, getting together for abstinent meals. You know, I started going to their houses and, you know, having experiences with their families and playing games in their backyard and just, you know, like just getting together. And it was really nice, one, that they're walking the way of life that I am. We, you know, we have weighed and measured our food together. We have prayed together. We have gone on meetings together. I was with two of my dear friends when I got my 6-year coin this last time around. Super special. We got together and went on our Zoom meeting, but we were together and it was really lovely to, you know, be in person. And I'm looking at my coin here, my 6-year coin that they gave me. And it's inside a cover to my big book, who another one of my friends, my local friends, gave me this big book cover just last week for my birthday. And on the inside cover, like a couple stickers that my other local friend gave me. And you know, I have these stickers on here and the big book and the coin. It just reminds me of like the special memories that I have with my friendships and my friends here. And it carries me. It really touches my heart. And, you know, I want to share an experience. I went on a trip for my birthday with some friends and family. It was five of us. And it was a girls' trip, and no one was in program. No one's in program, just myself. And we went on a weekend trip, and it was lovely. And, you know, every morning I do prayer meditation. I do 30 minutes of prayer meditation, non-negotiable, every morning. And so when I go on trips, like, I still do that. So I find a way to do that, whether it's, like, early or just taking that first half hour to, you know, get quiet with God. But I had mentioned the night before, like on that Friday night, I had mentioned, you know, like what's the plan for the morning? You know, when are we going to start making breakfast? When are we going to get on with our day? What are we going to do? And I mentioned that I do this 30 minutes of prayer and meditation. And they joined me in that. They were like, they thought that it sounded lovely. And I just said, you know, sometimes I write and I just play like instrumental music, or, you know, we don't even need to play music. We can just I write a gratitude list. I kind of just do my prayers, ask God for direction in my day. And all we sat in a circle. I mean, not, we just sat on the couch. But they joined me in that. And it was so special. And my friend, my best friend, she, when we were done, was like, wow, like that was so nice just to start the day with, like, with quiet time. That is, like, it was, you know, these are universal things that help people regardless of whether they're in program or not. And just it, that was a really special memory for me because, you know, I want to integrate my life in the community with other people. I want to be able to have these lovely experiences weekends away, you know, and it doesn't matter that I'm in program. Like, I can, we still made an abstinent breakfast together after that. Like, everyone else ate, you know, whatever, but there was things there that I ate, and I didn't care that I put my food on the scale. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. It's not about that. But anyways, the point is that they sat with me and they did prayer and meditation, and I was able to do that with people that weren't in program, and that was very, very special. I also do prayer and meditation with my husband sometimes. He also is not in program, but he'll sit with me while I do my 30 minutes, and sometimes he sits quiet. Sometimes he's, you know, doing things like, well, he could be on his phone or he could, you know, whatever. But he's with me, and we pray before meals, and you know, it's just, it's special. It's very special to me. You know, it says in the big book that we invite our friends to join us in morning meditation. And I have taken that paragraph seriously, that I can invite my husband, I can invite my friends, I can invite my family into these morning sessions. And I just want to give a plug for, you know, local gatherings. So we have a retreat. We are very lucky in the Detroit area. We have a retreat, an OA weekend retreat twice a year in the spring and in the fall. I've had the great pleasure of being involved in those retreats for the past few retreats, and we're in the process of planning the one in the spring. On Tuesday, I'm actually going on a little road trip with some OA friends to visit one of the venues that we might have the retreat at. And, you know, looking at some organizational options, it has been such a pleasure and a joy to be planning this with people in my community in OA. I've made such lovely friendships, and, you know, we're working together for this common purpose of bringing OA to people who need it. The last retreat was so special. I had a wonderful time in the fall retreat. We just did it in September. One of our very beloved members of Overeaters Anonymous flew in to be our speaker for the weekend. I had another friend fly in and stay with me. We did our prayer meditation together. We prepped and packed our food together. We had matching pajamas. We were silly and fun. And, you know, we shared in the fellowship of the Spirit. We really, really did. And you know, just having that weekend and planning it and, like, just being involved in this local fellowship was so lovely. And, you know, the LA birthday party, I have to put a plug in for that. Last year, I had been in the past once, but this past year was really, really special. My sponsor picked me up from the airport. We went, a group of us, like, went shopping at Trader Joe's, got what we needed. We had meditation together. There were some fellows, like, singing in the morning meditation. That was so lovely. We prayed together, so many workshops. There was a dance party that I got out of my comfort zone. Just so many lovely memories together with fellowship and sponsor and in real life and our sponsorship, like, tribe, you know, my sisters in recovery. So nice to be in person. I'm going again this year. It's in January. Highly recommend. You know, for me, it was worth the travel and everything that comes with that, because I carry these memories with me. Like, I see people on Zoom meetings that I met, and, you know, it's just different. I do feel more a part of when I get together with people in real life. And I'm involved in the planning committee and the birthday party this year, and it's just, like, it's so lovely. I really enjoy the time that I spend in service, and, you know, I'm kind of a go-getter and a busybody when it comes to, like, planning. And, you know, I never really thought I was a planner per se, but I find myself really involved in wanting to, like, do things. And so, you know, this has been a great thing that I can do, a way that I can give back. And some weekly meetings. I do weekly Zoom meetings. I do my in-person meetings. My home group in person is Sunday at noon. I have one in-person meeting that I go to, and then I go to a virtual meeting on Saturday and a virtual meeting on Tuesday. I have, like, regular virtual meeting, Zoom meetings that I go to. You know, when I my sponsor, again, about a year, maybe a little more than a year ago, said, like, come in, turn your camera on, sign up for service. And I just started to do that. I just signed up to do the timer, or I signed up to be, you know, read something. And people started seeing me on there, and then they started, you know, saying hi to me more regularly, and, like, they started to get to know me. And then, you know, before I knew it, I did feel like I was a part of the group. I felt like I really was a part of, and, you know, I look forward to that meeting. I search the chat. I look for newcomers. I introduce myself. I put my name out there for sponsorship or phone calls. And, you know, I look for ways that I can be of service. I do find it to be, like, my husband is so funny. He's like, he'll see it pop up. We have a shared calendar on my phone that, like, every week it's, like, pops up, like, oh, you know, going to get on your meeting. And it's just, like, that's the routine. I mean, if I go out of town and I have something going on, of course I'm present for my family, but most of the time I'm on that meeting and on those meetings. And let's see, what else do I want to say? So some other moments of fellowship, like, sponsorship has been really important for me. I have had a sponsor the entire time, last 8 years. I sponsor other people, and I really do find, like, solace and quiet time. I find peace in my soul that's found through the spirit. I had an experience when I got married. I got married about a couple of years ago, and we had a very, very small wedding. And my sponsor at the time was one of the 20, I think we had 20 people. We just got married in this very small setting, and my sponsor was there. And I remember thinking, like, I was so, like, scared to, like, you know, thinking about my past, how, you know, I couldn't show up. Like, I was scared in the sense of, like, God, like, help me rise up to this, you know, role that I'm going to take on as a wife, and help me just be unselfish, help me live this life of love and service in my life and also to my husband. And my sponsor prayed with me right before I walked down the aisle. We sat in this room together, and I just remember saying a prayer, and she prayed for me, like, God, help me in this new endeavor, in this new chapter of life. And our photographer was there and took photos of this. It was just her and I in the room and the photographer. And, you know, I have those photos, and they're so special. Like, those, that is so special that she was there with me, that I could bring this life of the 12 steps and God to where I was walking, what I was doing, where I was going. You know, and I think about that, and it's like God has done for me what I could not do for myself, like in terms of being a wife and just all these hats that I have with work and with life and friends and service. Like, I did not have the time in my day before recovery to, like, do all of this stuff. Like, this is seriously an act of God. Like, I did not know I had the time in my day to even do all this stuff. And it is such a joy. And so that was really special. And, you know, I've gone to birthday parties and, like, my friends in the local area. And, you know, I spent the whole day of my birthday. It was just this past, the end of October. And, well, it was October 20th. I realized we're still in the end of October. I spent the whole day with fellows. I went to an in-person meeting. I picked up a person before the meeting. I had some lovely ladies over that night, and we played games and just had, like, lovely chats together. And my friend has this meeting in her backyard every couple weeks, and it's so nice. Like, all summer, just every couple weeks, us ladies would get together. We'd bring our own chairs and our big book or our AA 12 and 12 and, you know, just read through it and share about our week and what's going on and how we're living these principles in our life. Like, that's what it's all about. And I've met people in other, it's just so fascinating that, you know, I've met people in different areas of Michigan too, and how, like, our lives weave back together at some point. Either someone moves to this area and knows me from somewhere else and starts coming to the meetings, or, you know, I go to a meeting in the mission. I found my sponsor there when I moved to California because she was from California visiting a meeting in Michigan. And so when I moved to California, I had a sponsor. Like, it's just incredible how weaved together all of this is. And that's God, that's not me, like, weaving all that together. So back to the big book. It says on page 87, if circumstances warrant, we ask our wives or friends to join us in morning meditation. And I kind of talked about this already, like, having the experience of being away with family and friends and asking my husband to join me in morning meditation. But I have these two friends in OA that I just love to pieces. They are, like, my go-to call ladies. And we started getting together on Zoom and doing our morning meditation on Zoom. And, like, 6:30 in the morning, logging on my Zoom room, and here's my two friends. And, you know, we read from the big book, and, well, one of us will, like, read the daily reflection or the story of the day. And just, like, I am so smiley when I think about it. Like, I'm just warmed in my heart to think about the connection I have today. My husband is, like, he, like, laughs. When my friend was here, she came to the retreat, he was laughing, like, you two are just two peas in a pod. Like, just that I never thought that I could have this deep of relationships, and think about all the laughter that happens, and, you know, it's lovely. So Yeah, so we've had this meditation experience on Zoom every once in a while. That's lovely. And, finding strength together. Like on page 152, I'm just going to go to page 152. It says that we need to have a sufficient substitute. So here we go. We have page 152. We have shown how we got out from under. You say, yes, I'm willing, but am I going to be consigned to a life where I shall be boring and glum like some righteous people I see? I know I must get along without food, but how can I? Have you a sufficient substitute? Yes, there is a substitute, and it is vastly more than that. It is a fellowship in Alcoholics Anonymous or in Overeaters Anonymous. There you will find release from care, boredom, and worry. Your imagination will be fired. Life will mean something at last. The most satisfactory years of your existence lie ahead. Thus we find the fellowship, and so will you. The most satisfactory years of my life lies ahead. Like, that's an incredible promise. And this has come true. I will find release from care, boredom, and worry. Imagination will be fired. Yeah, like planning this local retreat and having a fellow over on Wednesday with her new puppy to play with mine, and like just these are really, really memorable experiences. I'm not bored. I don't worry. Like, I do, my life does mean something at last. And the fact that, like, the most satisfactory years of your life, years of my existence lie ahead, thus we will find the fellowship and so will you. That's such a great promise. It says, how is that to come about? You ask, where am I going to find these people? You are going to meet these new friends in your own community. Near you, compulsive eaters are dying helplessly, like people sinking in a ship. If you live in a large place, there are hundreds, high and low, rich and poor. These are the future fellows of Overeaters Anonymous. Among them, you will make lifelong friends. You will be bound to them with new and wonderful ties, for you will escape disaster together, and you will commence shoulder to shoulder your common journey. Then you will know what it means to give of yourself that others may survive and rediscover life. You will learn the full meaning of love thy neighbor as thyself. And it's incredible. Like, I have become happy. I feel like I'm respected in my community, at work, in my family, and I feel useful. And how did this arise out of such misery and hopelessness? And the answer is that I have found a God as a result of working these steps abstinently, and they can happen with anyone else too. And it says, should you wish them above all else and be willing to make use of our experience, we are sure that they will come. The age of miracles is still with us. Our own recovery proves that. Like, I was absolutely willing to go to any lengths. I was dying and desperate. I was willing to do anything that my sponsor suggested. And luckily, she had the knowledge of her experience of recovery as well, that she was armed with the facts, that she was able to share with me the program of recovery that worked. And, Bill met Dr. Bob, and he was faced with a choice. Like, on pages 153 to 157, he's faced with a choice. Like, he looks down at this bar that he sees people drinking and having fun, and then he sees the phone booth. And, we're faced with these choices where we see people so-called having fun, people that are distinctly different than I am with food. And I'm faced with these situations where I see people drinking or eating with impunity, and then I see, my phone, and I can pick up my phone. And there's something that happens when I reach out you know, the fellowship of the Spirit is in full motion when I reach out to someone. You know, there's a power greater than myself that is in those situations. Page 154. He wanted so much to talk with someone, but whom? You know, there's this feeling sometimes of, like, loneliness, like, that I have experienced in the past. Like, I want so bad to talk to someone, but who? And now I have many people to call. And that's why, like, as a newcomer, I was told, like, call 3 people a day. Call recovered people every day. That way when, you know, the F hits the fan, like, I already have that muscle built that I can call people. And it says at the bottom of page 154, he would phone a clergyman, his sanity returned, and he thanked God. He stepped into the booth and he lifted the receiver. And, you know, sanity returns when I pick up the phone. And I share with people what's really going on. Sanity returns. I'm losing my voice. Maybe this is a sign that I need to wrap it up. Just got like a tickle in my voice. Okay. So I am just going to start wrapping it up with a few pages from A Vision for You. It says on page 158, he found God, and in finding God, he found himself. That was in June 1935, and he never drank again. He, too, had become a respected and useful member of his community. And, you know, like, finding God, I find myself. That is so true. There is a deep down within me, there is a higher power. And in searching through, you know, my searching and fearless moral inventory, getting rid of these character defects that block me from God, like, in finding God, I find myself, and I'm able to show up and be of useful service to my fellows. Page 159, a year and 6 months later, these 3 had succeeded with 7 more, seeing much of each other. Scarce an evening passed that someone's home did not shelter a little gathering of men and women, happy in their release and constantly thinking how they might present their discovery to some newcomer. In addition to these casual get-togethers, it became customary to set apart one night a week for a meeting to be attended by anyone or everyone interested in a spiritual way of life. Aside from fellowship and sociability, the prime object was to provide a time and place where new people might bring their problems. Our place is to be of maximum service today. My purpose in life is to share what has been given to me. When I find an opportunity to share this program or to share what has been given to me, you know, that's my responsibility. It's my responsibility to share that. It says he succumbed to that gay crowd inside who laughed at their own misfortunes and understood his. You know, this joyous crowd inside, he succumbed to that joyous atmosphere. Like, and it says later in an upper room of his house, he heard the story of some whose experience closely tallied with his own. So, you know, hearing people, like, telling my story, and that's what we're supposed to be doing for the newcomer. The expression on the faces of the women, that some indefinable something in their eyes, the stimulating and electric atmosphere of the place, conspired to let him know that here was haven at last. They knew they had a host of new friends. It seemed they had known these strangers always. There are people in my life that I feel like I have known forever. Like at this local retreat that I just went to, we each had our own rooms, and we decided to stay in the same room. We were up like giggling and laughing and like doing our prayer meditation, telling stories. Like I felt like I had known her forever. Page 163. This is to the newcomer or someone that's, like, you know, recently recovered. We know what you're thinking. You say to yourself, I'm jittery and alone. I couldn't do that. But you can. You forget that you have just now tapped a source of power greater than yourself. To duplicate with such backing what we have accomplished is only a matter of willingness, patience, and labor. Like, I'm not going to lie, there's a lot of effort that goes into me staying spiritually fit. But it's not labor that isn't without. It, like, this labor that I do is with wonderful, wonderful results. Like, I'll do this hard labor any day of my life to not go back to where I was. All right, just going to end with this. Page 164. Our real reliance is always upon God. God will show you how to create the fellowship you crave. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. And if you're on one of the phone meetings that I go to, the meeting has now been turned off, or the recording is now whatever it says at the end of the meeting. But I just want to thank everyone for the time today that I can come and share about my friendships, my fellowships, and just the beautiful recovery that I've found here. So thank you so much, and I'll pass.
Thank you very much, Abby D. What a great presentation. It was just like walking with you hand in hand through your life as a fellowship, as your friends, through to the end to where you stopped right now. It was really great. Thank you. It's going to be wonderful to have it as a part of our archive recording. Thanks again. And we're going to ask Abby for her contact information at the end of the meeting after the recording has stopped, as she was indicating. So stay with us for that. And the share ID number for this recording today, October 27th, 2024, is 21863, 21863 for this presentation. If you want to go back or share it with anybody else, please do. So now the lines are open for questions. If you have a question for Abby, please unmute your phone by pressing *1 on your phone keypad. Offer your first name, the first letter of your last name, and your state, please, so folks can find you. And then immediately upon asking your question, please press *1 again to mute your line. Who would like to ask a question this morning?
Larry G. from California.
Monica S. from Michigan.
Monica S. Who else?
Larry G. from California.
We got you, Larry. Can you hear me?
Thank you. Yes, I can.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, good deal. You're the first one up. So let's take that as our message that we will get more as time goes along. Larry, you want to ask your question first now, and then followed by Monica, and we'll open it up again. Good morning again, Larry.
Good morning. Thank you, Abby. I just love how lovingly you talked about your marriage and your husband. And I, too, have a loving marriage, and I'm so grateful my wife is also in recovery and visions. We are doing this journey together. My question is, there's times where my wife and I are not on the same page. There's times we get upset with each other, and that's when I have to really dig deep and work the principles and the traditions. And I'm wondering, when you and your husband are not on the same page, how do you do that? How do you work the principles so that you work all these principles in your affairs, especially your marriage. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much, Larry, for the question. And, you know, I actually did another special edition on practicing these principles in all areas of my life, or all affairs. I don't like the word affairs. Because I'm not having them anymore. But anyways, I did a special edition on that you may want to listen to. But just, you know, when my husband and I have disagreements, which we do, sometimes it starts with me saying something and being like, okay, that wasn't Abby. Like, that was not kind to say. Or, like, realizing that I'm wrong in some way. And, you know, then I get that feeling of, like, I was wrong, and what this program has taught me is that I need to admit when I'm wrong. And so I have a pretty good practice, whether it's immediately or after some time, of admitting that I was wrong. And my husband is pretty, like, he gives me space to have that. Like, he's pretty used to me admitting when I'm wrong. He kind of always knows I'm going to come back to the situation and say, you know, I was wrong for this, and how can I make it right? I just make amends. Like, I start by saying, hey, I'd like to make an amends to you. And he's like, yeah. He's so funny. He, like, jumps on the couch and he's like, I'm ready for this. Like, he loves when I make amends because he just appreciates it. And I'll say, I was wrong for this, and I'm working on doing things this way. So, like, I was wrong for the way I talked to you. I'm working on, I want to be more kind and loving in my communication. Is there anything I can do to make it right with you? And usually he just says, like, no, just love me, or just, you know, don't do that again, or whatever he says. You know, most of the time it's no, but he just appreciates that I say where I was wrong. And then I just try to do better next time. Like, in admitting I'm wrong, it helps me when I go to do that same thing the next time. It helps me not, because I'm like, oh, yeah, I just made amends for that. And sometimes it takes multiple times of doing the same thing to get it. Like, I've called my sponsor, like, I did it again. Oh, my gosh, I did it again. And it's like, it just takes what it takes. And I consistently just try to seek a spiritual way of life. It says in the, you know, there's a lot of really good stuff in starting on page 68 about, you know, if we're honestly sorry for what we have done, we're willing or have the honest desire to let God take us to better things, and we believe we'll be forgiven. So just if I do really have the honest desire to make things right and to be in a workable relationship with my husband, that I just pray and I ask God for guidance on where to go from there. So I hope that was helpful. I'm happy to answer any more questions about that. But that special edition that I did to search Abby D, I can't remember the exact title. But, yeah, that might be helpful also.
Thank you, Larry G. from California, for your question this morning. Next up is Monica S. from Michigan. Your question, please.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Loud and clear. You just come in swinging.
I'll
let you know.
Awesome. Okay. Monica S. from the Detroit, Michigan area. Thank you so much, Abby, for giving so much of yourself. You're one of the most amazing people I know and have the privilege of knowing. Just really quick, in the beginning, the last paragraph in the vision for you was read, and, you know, it says, you will surely meet some of us as you trudge your road to happy destiny, and trudging is a difficult and laborious walk, but it's absolutely worth it to meet people like you. And so my question is not related to that. But my question is, I know you work full-time and are married, and, like, with all the retreat planning and birthday party planning and service that you do, practically speaking, do you ever get a little bit off your program, like, regarding food planning or sponsor assignments or 10-step work or anything? And if so, how do you get back on your program? Or if you don't get off your program ever at all doing all those things, how is it that you stay on and not get off? Thanks.
Thank you so much, Monica. I love you so much. yeah, you are very dear to my heart. So thank you so much. And it's a lot, you know. It is a lot. Like, sometimes I think about, like, how did I even have time in the day? Like, I'm also taking two college classes right now to add on a certification to my current license to do a job that I want to do, that I'm grateful to have right now. But in order to have this job, I had to add on some extra, continuing ed classes. So I'm doing that too online, which is nice. I don't need to actually go somewhere. But I don't know. Like, it's one of the miraculous, unexplainable things, I guess. I love my routine. I always pray and meditate every morning. Like, that is not, that 30 minutes always happens. So I don't skip that. However, I just realized, this morning I had a dog sitting, my neighbor's dogs, and I had to run over there and, let them out real quick. And I realized, I was like, oh, I'll do it after my prayer and meditation. But it's like, I'm sitting here praying and meditating while these dogs need to go outside. Like, that doesn't sit right with me. Like, I need to go let the dogs out. So I let the dogs out quick, and I came right back, and, I started my time. I paused my timer at, 25 minutes or whatever I had going on. And then I just did it again when I got back. And so there is a constant balance of asking God, God, where do you want me? What do I love all day? I'm always faced with dilemmas of where should I be? How should I be spending my time? And I do get tired sometimes. I do get tired sometimes, but it's a different type of tired, but knowing I'm going to be okay, and tired, but I'm also having a great time in my life. So it's I don't know. It's honestly, I don't know. I just have time in my day. Like it says in the big book, when we recover, we become more useful and we become more efficient. And in the chapter to the employers, it says there's when someone gets sober and recovered that they can do the work of multiple people. And that's just kind of how I feel. My life was so small before, and I felt like I didn't have any hours in the day. And now I feel like I have so many hours in the day, but it's really the same amount of hours. It's just I'm able to do it. And I think, too, my friendships and my social circles have become, OA, doing service. That's what I want to do now. Meeting out, at the bar or in the grocery store, binging my way through life, racing around town, and drive-thrus. Now I'm spending my time, planning and organizing retreats and being on the phone with sponsees and making plans to get together with local friends. That's what my life is now. So it's the same amount of hours in the day, but it's more, it's targeted more to a spiritual thing. And in terms of food, I always food prep on Sunday night. So Sunday night, I'll plan for Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, breakfast and lunch, and then I'll usually just have dinner when I come home from work, but I plan ahead for my breakfast and my lunch. And then on Wednesdays, I do Thursday, Friday. So it's rare that I'm scrambling to pack my lunch. Sometimes I guess it happens. Last night I got home late, and I realized I didn't have a breakfast prep this morning. I do something that I do overnight, so I need to do it the night before. And I just quickly put together a breakfast, so I had it this morning. So sometimes I do one meal at a time, but most of the time I'm prepping a lot at once so that it's better for me through my busy life. So thank you, Monica, for the question, and I love you.
Thank you very much, Monica S. from Michigan, for your question this morning. There's plenty of time for additional questions. This is your invitation to press star 1 on your phone keypad. Give us your name, the first letter of your last name, and your
Sarah
state.
G.
Hey, Sarah G. Where are you from?
Ontario.
Canada. Okay, great. Thank you.
Should I ask now or should I wait for more names?
Just give me one more moment, but it looks like maybe we'll put you on. Anyone else? Star 1, please. Go ahead, Sarah, with your question.
Hi, Abby. Thank you so much for your lovely presentation. My question is like this. I'm relatively new to these calls. I don't even have a food plan yet. Hopefully tomorrow I have a meeting with a nutritionist. My question for you is, where, like, does this line come when you say, I've been abstinent for this long, I'm recovered for this long? Like, how do you know that you're in the recovery stage, in the recovered stage, not in the recovering stage? And what impact or significance does that have moving forward?
Hi, Sarah. Thanks for the question and welcome. So glad to hear that you are also, you know, finding support from a professional in regards to the food. There also is an OA pamphlet called The New Plan of Eating that has some food plans in it that has, like, amounts and stuff, too, for anyone that would want to get started before they get a professional. So just want to put a plug in for that. And when I say I'm recovered, like, I – and so, like, I put down the food and then worked all of the steps. And to me, I'm recovered now because I'm not in that hopeless state of mind and body. Like, I've had a spiritual experience as a result of the steps, which has brought about recovery from compulsive eating. So, like, I don't compulsively eat anymore. So I'm recovered from, you know, before I was binging multiple times a day, binging, purging, overeating, undereating, overexercising, all the things that I used to be doing, I'm no longer doing one day at a time. So I'm recovered from that. Like, I don't have that anymore. And the way that I stay recovered is I work the steps completely abstinent. So, you know, it's a two-part thing. It's the food and the allergy and, you know, the physical part. But once which is abstinence. One part is abstinence and the other part is recovery. Like, I can be abstinent, but I'm still, like, crazy and obsession, you know, causing wreckage in my life. Like, there's craziness once I'm abstinent. But what helps me be recovered is the peace I feel as a result of working the steps. I'm through the steps. I'm continuing to work on this relationship with my higher power. I'm admitting I'm wrong as I go throughout the day. I'm making amends as needed. I'm sponsoring other people. To me, like, that's recovered, because I'm through the steps. I've been through the steps abstinently, and I have found a spiritual experience. Like, I've had a spiritual awakening as a result of the steps. There are also some special editions, I believe, too, of where people, like, talk about what is the difference between recovering and recovered. So I'm happy to chat more and give you some additional resources. I know some other people that probably, you know, that do a really great job at explaining that difference. So I'm happy to share my number and to chat more with you about that. I'd have to look and see, like, where I have those, you know, there's recordings and some more information I have from other people that have been really helpful in determining, like, how do I know if I'm recovered?
Thank you very much, Sarah. Yeah, Sarah G, for your question. Sarah, would you unmute, please, by pressing *1? I have a question for you.
Hello.
Hi, Sarah.
Sarah G.
In an interest to be of support to you, would you be willing to give your telephone number this morning?
Sure, but it's Canadian. I know a lot of people can't call Canada, but I'll give it anyway.
Okay.
647. Got
mm-hmm.
that?
Mm-hmm.
786.
786.
7584.
7584, and you're in Ontario. Is that Eastern or Central?
Yeah, I'm on the East Coast,
New York. Sounds good. 647-786-7584, Eastern time.
Yes.
Thanks a lot, Sarah. Appreciate that. We want to be a support to you and see if we can surround you as the fellowship.
Thank you. Yeah, just text me first, please, okay?
Okay.
Thank you. Sounds great. Take care.
Okay. Okay, we have time for a couple more questions this morning. Press star 1 on your phone keypad. Love to hear from you.
Susan A. from Delaware.
I got Susan A. from Delaware.
Susan G. from Los Angeles. Susan G. from Los Angeles.
Gotcha, madam. From Los Angeles. Okay, let's go with that then and see where we come to from there. Sue A., want to ask your question, followed by Susan G.
Yes, my name is Sue A. It might be under Susan A. I am from Delaware. I am so grateful for this. I just celebrated 5 months of abstinence, real abstinence, for the first time ever. And my question is, I'm finding that, you know, a lot of the people that I'm with are not part of the program, and my friends are starting to shift. And I like how you said you reached out to local people and, you know, you went on different ways to find them. And I'm just curious if the same thing happened with you, because you seem to surround yourself with recovered people. And I'm just curious as to, is that a big part of your program, you know, really staying in the solution?
Yes, thank you so much for your question. I have friends that are recovered and not recovered, and in OA and not in OA. So I think, especially as I have found joy through this program, like it has extended to not only like in OA, but in like my work life and my family life. I love to camp, and I just went camping this past summer with, I got together like a whole group of people from my work, and it was like, it was so lovely. We had a really lovely time, like my team at work, we all went camping together, and, you know, no one else was in program, but I just had the greatest time, and I really love, like, the people that I work with, and they brought their families, and I liked being with their kids, and, you know, I enjoyed that, and I took care of myself on this trip. Like, first, like, you know, we bring our own cooler, we bring our own food, I did my prayer meditation in the morning. I paused like as I needed to throughout the day, and I really enjoyed my time with them. I also have friends from my so-called like unrecovered life. I have a really dear friend that actually a couple really dear friends from my like from one was from my childhood that I grew up with, who's my best friend, and then my other one, I used to work with her, and we still are very close. We see each other probably less. I mean, we probably see each other like once a month or even less, maybe. I don't even know. Maybe sometimes more. But I have good close friends that are not in recovery. And then I have people in all areas of recovery, you know, within OA. Like, I have people that are recovered that I know have been recovered. I have people I talk to that are recovering. I have, you know, lovely relationships with people that are newcomers. Like, I love sharing the message of recovery with newcomers. So, you know, and then there's people that I don't really know. You know, I come into contact with so many people in OA and in life that I don't necessarily know where they stand, but that, you know, we know that there's this existence of like love and community among us. So sometimes I don't really know where people are at in their recovery, but if I talk to them on the phone or if I, you know, if I'm around them a lot, I tend to know where they're at, what's going on in their life. And You know, I have my tribe of people that are recovered, that if I need to do a 10th step, like, I know who I'm calling. I have a pretty, like, tighter group of people that are recovered, that people that know my life and my story and my situations, and that I go to because I get, like, spiritually aligned when I talk to them. There's a few that I'm thinking of that are just in my God squad, where I just, one of my friends, we came in around the same time-ish and are about the same age-ish and have called each other for quite some time. And she came into town, and actually she came into where I lived one time, and we got together and, you know, went to a coffee shop together. But she's one that I, you know, I've been walking this journey with for years. And other people that I've met on, like, 11th step and 10th step calls that I've been friends with, I never met them in person, but I just have, like, this deep connection with them that we've never actually spoken or met in person, but people that I really just love and consider dear friends. So I would say that I have a wide variety of people in my life. And so, yeah, I hope that helps.
Thank you very much, Sue A. from Delaware. And if you're looking for on a membership list, consider searching Susan A. from Delaware as well. Next up with a question is Susan G. from California. Your question, please, madam.
Good morning, Melanie, and thank you for everybody else who's being of service this morning, and welcome to all the newcomers. Abby, that was certainly worth getting up at zero dark 100 hours for. Thank you for that beautiful presentation. My question is, you know, we talk about in the big book about how ideas, emotions, and attitudes, which were once the guiding forces of our lives, they've been cast to one side. And I always know it's really easy to practice these principles and to be fabulous with all of you, but then I go out there in the world. Do you have an example of where God continues, or a couple of examples, where God continues to perform these miracles for you in your work life, in your home, and where you see all of a sudden something happen and you stand back and you go, that has to be God, because that wasn't me? So that's my question.
Hi, Susan. I love you. Thank you. Susan is my sponsor. She knows all my stuff when I fall off the wagon and need to, not with food, but when I fall off the wagon of acting sane in my life. She's the one that knows about it. And so, yeah, I'm just forever grateful for you, Susan. And I don't know what question you asked me. Like, I heard that you talked about my life, but what was this question? Can you restate that again? I'm so sorry.
Yeah, so it's basically where you continue to see God performing miracles in your life, where you react differently to life, where your ideas and emotions have really, really been changed but continue to be. And suddenly you pause and you go, that would never have been me without God.
Yes, okay, got it. Thank you. Gosh, there's so many where I stand back and I'm like, wow, that wasn't me. I think what the biggest thing that comes to mind is, like, the joy in my life. Like, I never thought that I would have joy. I thought that I would, you know, I thought this life of abstinence and recovery was just going to be basically miserable. And you know, the fact that I have friends today, like, honestly have friends that I love, that I enjoy talking to, people that I FaceTime, like, I feel comfortable, like, FaceTiming people in my life, in OA, I think that's definitely God. And then, you know, a sensitive topic that some people know about, some people may not, but I've had a very strong desire for a long time to have children, and that may not be my path. I'm being shown. I mean, maybe it is. I don't know. But just the complete surrender I've had around that is completely God. Like, I thought that, you know, I had to look a certain way. Life had to look a certain way in order for me to be happy. And now I'm honestly happy regardless. And I do have my times where I, you know, get caught in that. And that's where I have my fellows and sponsorship to help me out. I do a nightly review every night that Susan sees. I send it to Susan every night. And, you know, I admit where I'm wrong. I admit where I need help. I admit where I'm falling short. And as I go to bed, I thank God for the day and just ask for whatever corrective measures I need. And then I put my head on the pillow and I'm grateful for a day of recovery. And, you know, God continues to show me. I think even with my husband, I used to get like all bent out of shape about the kitchen. And sometimes I still do about like the house wanting to look a certain way. And then I fall short. You know, I'm leaving stuff all over the place, except I'm expecting my husband, you know. It's just, I think when the obsession of different things is removed, that's where I stand back and I'm like, wow, God is real. Like when the obsession of the kitchen looking a certain way, or the obsession of what my life looks like, or my obsession of what I need to say to my husband, or my obsession with something at work, or my, you know, whatever I'm like fixated and obsessed on, when that's lifted, I know that's God. Like, I know that's absolutely not me. I mean, there is a lot of labor with that, you know, doing the inventories, talking to people, making amends, seeking spiritual guidance. But I know that the result is not me. Another question, Susan. Love you.
Thank you very much, Susan G. from Los Angeles, for your question this morning. We might be able to eke out one more question. If you have a burning desire and you want to press star one to ask Abby D. a question this morning, we'll entertain that idea.
Regina F.
Hi, Regina. We got Regina F. I think that a couple people unmuted, but we have Regina for our last question today from New York. Would you like to ask a question now? Yeah.
Hi, thank you for your beautiful presentation. It's my first time asking a question. I was just wondering if you could just tell us about how you do your meditation for 30 minutes. I try to do that, but like, I find 30 minutes so long, so maybe you could expand on how you do that, please. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much. And I will say I didn't start with 30 minutes, like in you know, if you would have asked me this question 6 years ago, I had a hard time sitting for that long.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'll say it is actually pretty, it's enjoyable. I just set my timer for 30 minutes, and I sit on my couch. Well, first I set my timer, I get on my knees, and I pray, and page 86 says on awakening, it says exactly like what to do in the morning. So I thank God for the day. I ask God for direction throughout my day. God, divorce me from selfishness, self-pity, self-seeking, dishonest motives. Show me what your will is for me. You know, guide me throughout the day. Help me stay abstinent. Help me stay, so, you know, just I'm asking for guidance throughout my day. And then I sit on my couch and I have a notebook and my big book and maybe some other readers, whatever I choose. And I start with a gratitude list. I just write in my journal and it's just a notebook. And I write my gratitudes, you know, all my list of gratitude that could take up to a few minutes. So, you know, by this time, about 5-6 minutes has passed. And then I think about my day and I think about what I have coming up that day. And I sometimes even like make an outline, like, okay, I'm going to go to work. I have this meeting or I have this situation at work. And then whatever I'm doing after work, and I have, you know, whatever I'm doing for the day, I kind of just like make a little list, not very long, like literally like a minute or two, just outline. And then I pray and ask God into my day if there's anything I'm particularly worried about or struggling about at work, like if I have a meeting that I'm worried about, or, you know, anything regarding like my supervisor, or just any sort of dilemma that I have. I always have a dilemma or something going on in my life, and so, or a difficulty. And so I take that to like two-way prayer. I don't know if I'm even supposed to say two-way prayer on here, but I don't know if that's an outside issue. Anyways, I ask God with each situation, like, what is your will for me in this situation? God, help me not be afraid. But I'm also using the format of the inventory here. So if it's a fear, I'm saying, God, please remove this fear, direct my attention to what you'd have me be. And I get quiet for a moment. I just like feel like, what will God have me be? I write the answer, like write whatever I'm getting. And then I just try to follow that. It's like, that's what God is telling me to do. Like, so, you know, I just trust that whatever insights I'm getting are from God. If I'm not sure if it's from God or not, I'll check with someone else. But, you know, here's what I'm getting from God. But during my actual prayer and meditation, I do a lot of writing. So if I have a resentment, then I write it out in the with the columns, you know, with, you know, that's the whole, well, just quickly, like, why am I upset? What's it affecting? And then where are my mistakes? Where am I being selfish, self-seeking, dishonest, and afraid? And sometimes after my prayer meditation is done, like, I'll already have that written out so I can call and share it with someone. And then, you know, however much time I have left, sometimes it's anywhere from like 10, 15 minutes or less, then I just sit quiet. Like, if I notice I have like 6 minutes or 8 minutes left, I try to just sit quiet, like close my eyes and just think of God and listen, like feel God in my heart, and just basically ask for direction throughout my day. And then at the end of my prayer meditation, after my 30 minutes is done, then I just ask for, I ask God to give me whatever I need to take care of such problems throughout the day. So I hope that helps.
Thank you very much, Regina F., for your question this morning. And that's the last question that we have time for today. We made it through. That's beautiful. And thank you again, Abby, for giving so much of yourself today, especially in the extended area of answering your questions so thoroughly. It was just really, really nice to be a part of your recovery this morning. Thank you for giving so much of yourself. And we will get Abby's contact information after recording is stopped, so stay tuned. And we will close within our usual fashion here by reading page 164 of the Big Book. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you.